On Tech News Today, Facebook makes loading articles 10 times faster. Plus, a new bug makes data centers 10 times more vulnerable. And Samsung makes a big play for the Internet of Things. It's all coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today, I'm very excited about this, is CNET contributor, ZDNet. I know there's a net in there somewhere. ZDNet contributing writer Kevin Toefel. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, Mike. We're all one happy big family over there, so
yes,
it's all good.
We will be dragging on a CNET person as well later in the show, but for now, it's ZDNet. And Kevin, you are a runner, I know, and you're into fitness gadgets, and of course, you know, you're a professional. Don't try this at home. What do you use when you actually go running? What are you wearing on your wrist?
Well, it depends, and that's a lame answer, I know, but I try so many different things, Mike. I mean, I was wearing the Microsoft Band for a while. I had a Motorola Moto Active smartwatch from 2012 that I actually used for like 2 years. But my platform of choice to track my running and my exercise is actually RunKeeper. So more often than not, I'm carrying a phone and running the RunKeeper app. Lately, I have tried the Apple Watch. Mixed feelings on that. I actually like my Sony smartwatch 3 for running because it has an embedded GPS. So mixed bag.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Moto Active is actually a really interesting product in hindsight because the technology that was in the Moto X that made it interesting, made it an interesting phone for a while where you talk to it and it wakes itself up and all that kind of stuff. That was actually originally developed for the smartwatch platform within Motorola. Somebody told me that at the Moto X launch, and I was kind of blown away by that. I thought that was really interesting. But that is a cool watch, and I'm surprised that you like the Sony. But again, built-in GPS is a sweet feature, and I would think that that a lot of smart watches that do fitness will one day want to follow suit and actually build in GPS. We've also got a story later in the show about why the Chinese military doesn't like smartwatches. We'll get to that later in the show. But for now, why don't we jump into the big, big news, which is that Facebook today launched a new feature called Instant Articles. It enables a select few publishers to host content on Facebook itself. The content can include articles, videos, or sounds. And when users click on the articles in Facebook, it appears instantly because it doesn't have to wait for a browser to load. It's already there on Facebook. Posts reflect the typefaces and designs, not of Facebook, but of the publisher websites. Content providers include The New York Times, The Atlantic, NBC, National Geographic, BuzzFeed, The Guardian, BBC News, and Germany's Spiegel, and also Bild. So far, the feature works only with the iOS platform, but of course, we can expect a wider rollout. Kevin Toefel, this is, it has to be said, this is brilliant.
It's very brilliant on Facebook's part. And a lot of publishers that are not part of this program are kind of grousing about it, saying, hey, we're giving Facebook the keys to the kingdom here. And they may well be doing that. But the fact of the matter is Facebook has both the reach and the smarts and the software and the platform to make this work. I mean, think about it. You've got video playing instantly, stories just popping up immediately. You don't have to wait for loading. So, you know, my response to people who are complaining about it in the industry, do something better. And frankly, they haven't done that. So kudos to Facebook.
All you need to compete with Facebook is a monopoly on every social networking user. And and you can compete on an level playing field. When the social media revolution hit, Facebook was there. They got everybody. And so now they have a dominance in terms of users that hardly anybody can match. Now, one of the interesting things about this is the deal that Facebook is actually offering to publishers, and it's a sweet deal. If publishers sell ads that appear inside their own content, Facebook doesn't get any of it. They're saying you keep 100% of the revenue from the ads you sell. If we sell ads, we keep 30%. It's the normal ad deal. And this is a real incentive for the big, big publishers that they've gotten here to get on board with this thing. It's a win-win for them. They basically have a second website, really, on Facebook where their content can appear. Also, interestingly, Kevin, they're not providing preferential treatment, I guess you'd say, within the algorithm for these mm-hmm. articles. They're neither better or worse or more likely or less likely than anything else that's shared on Facebook to appear in the newsfeed. And again, this is, they're claiming 10 times the performance. It's 10 times faster mm-hmm. than a regular browser-based article that you might link to.
I think you're right, Mike. It kind of is a win-win, and that softens the blow to the publishers. My concern is what happens if Facebook changes those terms in the future. Once they have so much content and the broad user base that's enjoying this, what happens then? They change the terms, kind of everybody's going to be scratching their head saying, why did we agree to this? So it's going to be interesting to watch it develop.
So it's a profit deal. Huh. All right. Didn't see that coming. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, they can do anything they want in the future. Once they have a certain amount of lock-in, and once it's clear to publishers that if you really want eyeballs, you have to be on Facebook, because people, of course, spend so much time on Facebook, they can change their mind and charge anything they want. All right, well, we got some more news for you in just a sec, but let's talk about Prosper, one of our sponsors today. They're going to help you fund your next big project. You can borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days from Prosper. What can you do with a loan from Prosper? Well, you can pay off high-rate credit cards. You can fix up your house. You can buy a new car. You can even boost your small business. But here's the way Prosper works. People will actually invest in you and your project. So they know what your project is. They know what you're going to use the money for. And that will determine, in part, whether they want to fund that loan. For example, let's say you want to get a green loan. You want to initiate an environmentally friendly project. Let's say you want to add solar energy to your business or something like that. Well, that's going to attract investors who want to improve the environment. It's a really fantastic and very modern way to borrow money, much better than going to the bank, much, much better than borrowing from family or friends. And of course, they've helped more than $2 billion in funded loans happen. To check your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit, just go to prosper.com/twit. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your low-interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card. Just go to prosper.com/twit for this special offer. And we thank Prosper for their support of Tech News Today. Well, a huge vulnerability named Venom has been discovered in virtual machine software, which puts websites, databases, cloud-based applications, and the IT infrastructure used by businesses worldwide at serious risk. Joseph Steinberg is a security expert and columnist for Forbes and joins us to explain all this. A welcome to you, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
Now, can you describe Venom and how it works?
Sure. What Venom is a vulnerability in a somewhat obsolete piece of software that somehow has stuck around for over a decade, which is a floppy disk controller for virtual machines. And what happens when the vulnerability is exploited is essentially somebody loads too much information into a buffer that exists within that driver, overflows it, and either causes the hosting system to crash or to execute instructions that were not supposed to be executed.
So, Joseph, this vulnerability, I should say, has been around for a while. Can you tell us who actually discovered it and when was this all announced?
Sure. The vulnerability has been around since at least 2004. As I said, it's a piece of software that should have disappeared a long time ago or certainly been taken out of default distributions. A researcher at CrowdStrike was looking at vulnerabilities within virtual machines and looking at virtual machine security and came across this while he was doing some testing. Back in April, he notified the various parties that needed to be notified so that a patch could be issued, and the announcement to the public was made today. The reason for delaying was to ensure that there wouldn't be a situation where a potentially catastrophic vulnerability would be announced, and there was no way to address it.
Now, has this been actually exploited in the wild by malicious hackers anywhere that we know of?
We don't know of any exploits that have been done, which is a very good thing, because the potential damage from an exploit like this could be terrible. If you think about virtual machines, you have multiple different businesses running on virtual machines on the same physical platform. If somebody had exploited this, they could potentially escape from their own virtual machine and get into other parties, other businesses, data and systems that are running in the cloud, which obviously would undermine not only a small piece of security, but perhaps the whole cloud model.
So, Joseph, I mean, I know this all just hit, this news just hit, but does the industry actually have a fix for this yet?
So there are patches. Some have been deployed already and some are still coming. The problem with virtualization software is that it's, or with this particular vulnerability in virtualization software, is that it's not just in one product. It's in a driver that has been propagated to many different products because many products leverage the QEMU code base, which is where this particular vulnerability exists. So some of the providers that leverage it have already put out patches and distributed them. Some are still coming.
So it's cross-platform. Now, what should business owners and IT leaders do about this now that they know this news?
Well, first of all, if you have a hosted solution somewhere else, I would check with the hosting provider to make sure that they've addressed this risk. If you have virtual computers, virtual machines running somewhere within your office or on appliances in your office, you want to make sure that you're not vulnerable. There's a link in my article that actually will tell you if you're vulnerable, and I suggest checking that. And then also think about in the future, perhaps disabling services that you don't need on servers, whether they're local servers or servers hosted somewhere else. If it's somewhere else, you may want to ask the provider to do so, but local services on a local machine, you probably want to get rid of.
All right. Well, thank you so much for delivering this news, as bad as it is. Joseph Steinberg can be found at josephsteinberg.com and also on Twitter at Joseph Steinberg. Looks like you've got all the Joseph Steinbergs locked up. Good job on that one. You had to get in there early. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, Samsung yesterday unveiled its Arctic chip platform for the Internet of Things. Shara Tipkin is a senior writer at CNET. See, I told you we'd have CNET on here. And joins us now. Welcome to you, Shara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, what is Arctic exactly? This is, of course, a platform, but can you tell us more about what it is, how much it costs, like what the sort of levels are for this?
Yeah, I mean, basically what Samsung's trying to do is make it easy for companies, startups, you know, big companies, pretty much anyone to make devices that connect to the internet. So these Arctic sort of chip platforms contain, you know, the processing. They have sensors. They have connectivity. They also have a cloud platform that they connect to, so you can, you know, actually do something with the information. Basically, just trying to make it easier to make, you know, these smart devices. Like they had this this company that makes a sensor that can go in shoes, and it could do things like be used in hospitals. And by using Arctic, instead of having to try to figure out how to put this together on your own, it kind of speeds up the development for these companies.
And that company's called Boogio?
Yeah, Boogio. Yeah, it's really interesting what some of these guys are doing. And I think for, you know, for really big companies who, you know, have a lot of resources and can easily, you know, have either have their own chip business or have long relationships with companies like Qualcomm or some of these other guys, it's not as difficult to figure out how to put this together. But for a lot of these startups or other small companies that just don't have the resources or just flat out don't want to spend the time having to figure out, you know, semiconductor technology, this can really make a difference. And, you know, even within Samsung, they're planning to use these in some of their appliances. You know, we'll see these in their products, you know, coming, you know, in the next few years.
Shara, you mentioned Qualcomm, and I know that Samsung has their Exynos chip line for smartphones and tablets that competes directly with Qualcomm Snapdragon. In terms of the Arctic, this chip, I would assume Qualcomm is a competitor. Who else is Samsung really competing with in this space?
Yeah, so with their most powerful Arctic chip, it basically is a smartphone processor. It basically is Exynos, which is, you know, that's in the Galaxy S6. You know, with these, this sort of platform, they're also competing against Intel, Broadcom, pretty much anybody who wants to be in this area, which is right now it's all the chip companies. Intel announced their Curie chip platform module, whatever you want to call this, at CES in January, but that's not going to be available until later this year. So right now, Samsung's chip, you know, their Arctic, which costs, you know, from a little under $10 to less than $100. That's out right now. So people are already using it.
Now, this was announced by Young Son, and he is the head of Samsung's Strategy and Innovation Center. Can you tell us a little bit about Young Son and also the Strategy and Innovation Center? I mean, interestingly, this is a major, major initiative for Samsung, and it was developed in Silicon Valley, not in Korea.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. He's a longtime kind of chip industry executive. He's done a lot of investments. Samsung started this business to try to have a bigger presence here in Silicon Valley and also find investments and invest in new technology that's, you know, 5 to 10 years out. You know, this is obviously something that's ready today, but they also announced work last year on new sensors for health monitoring, you know, and those aren't quite ready for, you know, to be widely used. Samsung has made just this huge investment. And with Young Son, he reports directly to the CEO in Korea. So, you know, he's definitely a very high-level executive here. You know, he's had a lot of relationships in the Valley, and they're really hoping that he can help them, you know, develop a bigger relationship here and also come up with new technology, find companies to invest in, you know, just really help Samsung get its growth going again.
It's actually funny that you mentioned the big investment with Samsung and an IoT platform, because back at the CES keynote, Samsung's whole big spiel was, you know, Internet of Things, and we should all work together and so on and so forth. They didn't have these chips at the time, but I came away with the talk of Tizen and as an operating system for Samsung's Internet of Things, but I didn't really see or hear any mention of Tizen in the Arctic news. Did I miss that, or did they just not speak of that?
No, they didn't. Well, they didn't really get into a lot of specifics during the keynote. They did have a roundtable with reporters afterwards, and they said that these do work with Tizen. They work with Android. You know, I think they're based on just a generic Linux operating system, but you can pretty much make it work with whatever you want. And you know, they have these three different models that they talked about, but these are just kind of the baseline for what they have now. And they really see customizing these for what customers need and, you know, coming up with different versions. So this isn't, you know, this is not just what they're doing, only what they have. You know, I think Samsung wants to support everything that they possibly can to get more people to use these.
Now, here in California, we are suffering a longstanding and very severe drought. We have one more year of water left before we all have to pack up and move to Washington State. Samsung says they want to solve California's water crisis. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, Samsung has a lot of money, and they're starting a challenge, this prize, where they're going to give away $100,000 to whoever can come up with idea to do something to help with the drought crisis. You know, their point is with Arctic, you don't have to be a technology expert to, you know, develop something. It's something, I mean, you have to have some knowledge, obviously, but it's, you know, they want good ideas, and they want things that you could do that Arctic could be involved with, but that can really help address the problems here. You know, and I think it's really interesting that they're doing this, because it is, you know, it's a serious issue here.
Yeah, it certainly is. Shar Tipkin is at CNET.com, and she's also in California. So she's in this boat with us, a boat surrounded by dryness. And you can follow her on Twitter at Shar Tipkin. Thanks for joining us today, Shara.
Thanks a lot.
All right. AT&T's $49 billion acquisition of DirecTV will probably not be blocked by the government, according to insiders. Alina Selyuk is a reporter for Reuters and joins us to talk about this. Greetings to you, Alina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. How close is the Justice Department and the Federal Communications Commission to actually making a decision on this merger?
It's coming. It's been almost over a year, actually, that this merger has been on tap. So its time is coming. It could be days, it could be weeks, but it won't be too much longer now. We're getting to a point where they are sitting down to talk about the specifics of what the merger would look like. From what we know, the Justice Department and the FCC are leaning toward approving this deal. There will be questions about what conditions should be placed on AT&T as part of the approval at the FCC. The FCC, of course, is the agency that decides whether mergers are in the public interest, whereas the Justice Department focuses purely on antitrust concerns. So the FCC's oversight of this merger is a bit more flexible toward conditions or concessions. And there have been numerous parties who have sort of weighed in asking for very particular things to be addressed as part of this merger. And we're expecting, kind of in a matter of days, AT&T executives are going to sit down with the FCC officials and hash out the details of what they're willing to agree to as part of the approval of their merger.
It's interesting that you bring up the conditions. If I recall correctly, AT&T at one point in time promised to put home broadband across their entire footprint in the nation, and they've fallen far short of that. So, Alina, what conditions do you think the FCC might impose here, knowing that and or, you know, just looking at this deal in general?
Well, of course, broadband is a much bigger concern for the FCC than anything right now. We learned that through the scuttled Comcast Time Warner Cable merger. Online video and over-the-top video became the crux of what unraveled that merger and raised the biggest red flags for the Federal Communications Commission. In this case, the broadband aspect is muted in the sense that AT&T's broadband offering, I think, accounts for about 17% of the U.S. population who is online. DirecTV does have national coverage, but they do not offer broadband. So when it comes to kind of addressing the immediate implications of this merger, when it comes to broadband, that is not nearly as big of a part of a conversation as it was with Comcast. However, we do expect the FCC and the companies will be very critically discussing what AT&T plans to do with their online offerings. They have promised to build out, as part of this merger, to rural communities and really cover more of the underserved populations and use the DirecTV reach to expand its broadband offerings in the next few years. So we do expect that there will be conversations, including about online video and how they treat it, interconnection, over-the-top video. We don't know what the conditions will look like. Obviously, the companies have not had that conversation with the FCC yet, but I'm sure we'll know soon enough.
My only condition would be for AT&T to never cancel my grandfathered unlimited plan. I would have nothing else for them. I just want that forever because it's so awesome, especially now that they upgraded it. Alina Selyuk is at Reuters.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Alina Selyuk. Let me spell that for you. AlinaSelyukh. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alina. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. Well, in government crackdown news, the official newspaper of the Chinese military, called the People's Liberation Army Daily, says all 2 million members of the country's military forces are banned from wearing smartwatches. Bummer. The ban was formalized after a soldier tried to use a smartwatch to take a picture of his army buddies in Nanjing. The ban is intended to prevent the accidental revealing of military secrets through location information or cameras. You know, 2 million is a lot of people to track. This is probably just as well for the China's enemies who might be spying on their military's whereabouts.
I'm a little surprised, though. I mean, first of all, I don't think smartwatches should really have cameras in the first place. That's just me. But do these folks not have phones that have cameras in them anyway? I'm very curious about if they're banned from anything with a camera. I totally understand what they're trying to protect, but in this day and age, it's getting tougher and tougher.
It is, for sure. And my understanding is that most military people in China, in fact, are banned from carrying smartphones, although not all. Although the smartwatch ban appears to be extended to all military personnel. So it's going to be tougher and tougher to enforce bans like this. You know, a smartwatch isn't too different in appearance oftentimes than a regular watch. And, so we'll see if they're going to be able to actually enforce this. But it is a clear new policy, and it's a sign of the times, I guess. And I would expect that something like this will not happen in most militaries. The United States, of course, is crazy for smartphones. It's becoming one of the primary forms of actual military communication, is just calling people on a smartphone. And so I don't see that happening with the U.S. military.
But no cameras on these smartwatches, please, people. Don't. Just don't.
Yeah, it's, you thought Google Glass was a problematic, put it on a smartwatch and it is bad. Although I'm curious to know what the smartwatch was, but the article didn't say, tragically. It was a Samsung Galaxy.
Yeah, that's
was it?
The
okay.
That makes sense, because I remember when it first came out, that was one of the big features they touted, and I shook my head back then. I'm still shaking my head now.
Well, keep shaking your head. There'll probably be more coming out with those features. Well, in big number news, we have a big number, $26.2 million. That's how many dollars a hedge fund called Standard General paid for the Radio Shack brand. Radio Shack filed for bankruptcy 3 months ago. In addition to the trademark, Standard General also got, quote, other intellectual property, unquote. I can't imagine what that was, Kevin Toefel, but that's a good price for a good brand that is now essentially almost worthless.
Yeah, it's actually more than I expected they would have gotten for it. I mean, I grew up on Radio Shack. I had my little battery card where I would go in as a kid and they'd give me a free battery every month because I was using the Mattel Electronics handheld games and going through batteries. But this day and age, even with the maker generation that we have going on, people just don't go to Radio Shack when they can go to so many other places online and so on. So I'm surprised that they got $26.2 million for it, but that's good for the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to help you order a pizza in just a second. But first, let's talk about ZipRecruiter, one of our sponsors today. ZipRecruiter is going to help you hire the best people you can possibly hire. And of course, it's the most important thing you're ever going to do as a hiring manager. As a manager or as a small business owner, you have to hire the right people. That's going to mean the difference between success or failure for everything you do. ZipRecruiter helps because they help you post to 100 plus job sites with a single click. And you can also post on social networks, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google+. And on Twitter, you can even automatically tweet every single job you post. The tweet just goes right out, which is a great feature. Just post once, and within 24 hours, the candidates start rolling in, and they roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface, which helps you sort through them. And of course, they'll help you choose which of the candidates are genuinely qualified and which do not meet your criteria, so you can save time on going through those resumes as well. If you also want to go for a search, ZipRecruiter itself has a huge resume database with 5 million resumes, and they add thousands of new resumes every single day. And that just comes free with your ZipRecruiter account. You can collaborate with anyone in your organization to find the best candidates. They don't charge you more for additional people involved in the hire. It's just a fantastic way to hire. It's the only way to hire these days. ZipRecruiter has been used by more than 400,000 businesses, and they've delivered more than 53 million candidate applications. Try ZipRecruiter today with a free 4-day trial and get your perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Well, in news you can lose, starting 1 week from today, Domino's will offer you the ability to order a pizza by simply tweeting a pizza emoji to Domino's Twitter account. The company will look up your pizza preferences, credit card, and delivery address in your customer profile in Domino's Easy Order system. Domino's will confirm the order by direct message, and it's available for U.S. customers only. Obviously, Kevin, this is something of a publicity stunt, but still, people are going to, tweeting off an emoji and having a pizza arrive is kind of cool.
It actually speaks to how much we've come to rely on Twitter and how many ways you can use it. I see some people going through customer support issues with various companies on Twitter, and they get better responses there than actually calling in or sending an email and so on. So it's interesting to that aspect. But I don't think I'm going to go on my long runs and tweet an emoji of a pizza and then see if I can beat it back to my house anytime soon. So that's just me.
Yeah, I think the next step, though, is that your smartwatch is going to measure your blood glucose level, and when it drops below a certain threshold, it will order the pizza for you and then let you know that it's on its way. That would be super, super convenient, although I don't need another pizza, personally.
Neither do I.
Well, our TNT fan of the day is William Mann, who posted this picture of his office on Twitter. He says that being a good CIO requires catching up with all the tech news first thing in the morning, and I couldn't agree more. And there we are. Awesome. Very nice office. Well, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Kevin Toefel, what are you working on these days? I'm curious to know you specialize in mobile computing and wearables and all that kind of stuff, but what are you currently working on?
Well, yeah, that keeps me busy. That topic is never stops. I mean, so I'm writing about iOS and Android and even Windows, which is now Windows mobile again, I heard just before this show, Windows 10 mobile. So yeah, there's always something going on there. Of course, the wearables, I'm putting my Apple Watch through the paces, as I said earlier on the show, and comparing that to Android Wear. And hey, right around the corner, we've got the Pebble Time shipping. So I'll have one of those as well. So lots to do. Lots keeping me busy.
My prediction is that the next mobile version of Windows will be called Windows CE. Again.
Again. CE2.
It's not going to happen. You can also follow Kevin at Kevin C. Toefel on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kevin. We'll see you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Right, take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher. It's a great place to subscribe, or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every single weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. You can find our selection of browser plugins and apps at twit.tv/apps. If you're ever in town, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just send email to tickets@twit.tv before you come. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, here's how you can do it. Just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on the social media site of your choice. Tag three friends, recommend that they subscribe, and maybe they will, and then they can join us on the ongoing Tech News Today party. You can also follow us on Twitter. Tech News Today TV is our Twitter name, and you can follow me on Twitter. It's Mike Elgin. Don't miss Tech News tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show was produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.